Again, so we're going to be beginning from the seventh parak of the Shaar HaYichud, again, the first major section. Again, if you have any questions at any point, feel free to just interrupt and ask or whatever. So we're gonna start now from the beginning of the seventh parak. Okay, so he says, "Acharaya shehabore yisbarach hu echad." So what's the proof exactly that Hashem is one? Right? Again, we know we say this every single day, right? Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hu mitnation is barer lanu bederech harayos ki yesh la'olam borei. So we've already, you know, proven extensively over the last couple of prakim that we spoke a lot about the last few days, that Hashem, by definition, must have created the world. Hischayavnu l'achakor alav. Now it's incumbent upon us, it's our obligation now, to go and further investigate. Imhu echad o yoser me'echad. Now, when, you know, so once we've established that Hashem created the world, so now we have to figure out, okay, so what exactly is Hashem? Is he one? Is he multiple beings? We're going to now present seven different arguments, as we'll see as we go along in this chapter, that seven different arguments to essentially prove the notion that Hashem is Echad. So, Ha'echad Mehem, the first of the arguments, Mitzad Bechinasenu La'ilos HaNimtzos. This is going to be based on, again, something that we spoke a lot about yesterday, the fact that we examine and we peruse and we look at all the things that exist in the world. Ki chasher nisbonein bahen, when we contemplate everything that exists, nimtza misparan pachos mi'alu lehen. It turns out that the things that exist in the world are less than their causes. In other words, the things that cause, or the beings that cause things to exist, are far fewer than the things which actually exist, right? For example, there is only one God, but that one God created hundreds and thousands and millions of things that exist in the world. V'chol asher nachkor al ilos ha'ilos ha'in l'mala, nimtza misparan pachos mehen. And the higher up you go in chain of events, in other words, the farther up you go in terms of what caused what to exist, so the number is going to get lesser and lesser, right? As you keep on going up and up and up until you get back to Hashem. V'chol asher ta'alena, the further up you go, yisma'it misparan, the number decreases, ad sheyagia el ila echas v'hi ila sa'ilos, until you get to the cause of all causes, which is Hashem. Hashem is the ultimate cause of everything that exists in the world. Ubirzeh, ki ishe hanimtza'im ein tachlis l'misparan. So individual things that exist in the world, whether it's people or it's animals or it's plants, right? All those things are basically infinite, right? There's no way to count the number of things that exist in the world. And when we start to think about the different species that comprise all of these things that exist in the world, so that number is going to be a little bit less. Right? Because there are only a certain number of types to each thing, right? This is like, I don't know if any of you remember, like when you took biology class in high school, but this is basically like when you go up, you know, from like, you have like, you know, I'm forgetting all the terms right now. You have like, you know, the kingdom, and then you have like the genus, and you have like all those terms to describe animals, for example. So the farther up you go, the more specific it gets. So in other words, you're gonna have less and less things as, so you know, you start with the general animals, so that, you know, there's like a million things that are in that category. But then the more specific you get, you know, as you go down to a specific genus or to a specific, you know, type of a description of an animal, so it gets less and less, and there are fewer and fewer things in each of those categories. And again, obviously works in the opposite fashion as well. In other words, the farther down you go, so the more you're gonna get, right? In other words, the more general terms that we use, so the more things will fit into that category, and the more specific things that we use, the less things that will be in that category. So the philosopher Aristotle already told us, so Aristotle broke up these 10 general categories into 10 types. Vehim, etzem, there's etzem, v'chama, v'eich, umitztarif, v'ana, umasai, umatzav, v'kinyan, ufoel, v'nif'al. All of these terms, which again, we're going to explain what each of these mean in a second, all of these terms are the 10 general categories into which all of creation is broken up. When you contemplate, when you think about the cause of these 10 general categories, those also break down into 5 categories, namely, hatinua, the things that move, right, motion, And also, the Hayisodos HaArba'ah, the four elements that we also mentioned a little bit yesterday, Shehem HaIsh, HaRuach, VaHamayim, VaHa'afa, right? Fire, air, earth, and water and earth are the four elements. So basically, everything, again, this is the same point that we just mentioned. The farther, the more specific you go, the less categories there are. In other words, the more things break down, the farther down the chain you go. V'chasher nachkor al ilas HaYisodos HaArba'ah, when we contemplate these four categories, these four elements, nimtzaim, it turns out, hachomer v'hatsura v'hem shnayim. So we also touched on this a little bit yesterday, the concept of chomer and sura. Chomer referring to matter, and sura referring to form, which again are different expressions of how things exist, and the different manners in which they exist, whether it's like a general existence or a more specific type of existence. Those are two categories of ways in which things can exist. V'chasher nachkor al ilasa. Was there a question?
Yeah. Okay, wait. So just clarifying. So
yeah.
We're talking about the seven arguments as to why God exists.
No. The arguments to why God exists, that was yesterday. Today we're talking about seven arguments by why God is one. Why God has to be one and one alone. So we're still in the middle of argument number one right now, okay? So we'll hopefully at the end of each argument we'll kind of like summarize it, because the Hebrew is very, very, very difficult, as you can see, and it's a very challenging philosophical concept. So hopefully we'll try to summarize everything at the end just to make everything clear, okay? So
the fourth argument is because like
Well, we haven't really spelled out the first argument yet. We're still developing it. So we'll see what it is in a few minutes. We'll get there, okay? So he continues. He says, "V'chasher nachkor al ilasam." So now, when we contemplate, when we think about the cause of everything, "Ayyeh misparam b'li safik pachos mem." Again, we started with Chomer and Sura, and now we're going to look into Chomer and Sura. So the overarching categories in which things are included is going to be less than that as well. "V'hu ritzon habore yisparach," and he says that is the will of Hashem. "V'ein mispar pachos mishnayim ela echad." So nothing breaks down from two aside from one, right? The only thing less than two, aside from zero, is going to be one. So imken habore yisparach echad al kopanim. So in other words, the only way to go down from a breakdown of chomer versus tzura, of form and matter, right, to get to something even less than that, even more basic than that, the only way down is to get to one. The only way to go is to say Hashem is echad. David HaMelech says in Divrei HaYamim, Hashem, you, the kingdom belongs to you, and you are exalted and elevated above everyone else. Ritzono lomar, ki hu ram al kol ramim, ve'elyon al kol ha'elyonim, ve'rosh kol tchila, ve'ilas kol ilah ve'alul. Hashem is the loftiest, the most exalted, the greatest. He's the first of all beginnings. He's the cause of all causes. Everything that exists in the world is because of Hashem. So essentially, this is argument number one. Argument number one, that Hashem must be echad, is because as you continue to break down everything that exists in the world, eventually you're going to get to the number one. That's the lowest point that you can end up in, right? So because the lowest point in which you can end up is the number one, therefore, by definition, Hashem, as we already proved yesterday, is the creator of the world, must also be echad, because the farther back you go, the more layers you peel away, essentially, you're eventually going to hit the number one, and that's going to be all that you have left, and therefore, that is proof number one that Hashem is echad. Okay, so now moving on to proof number two. V'hasheni. So the second argument basically comes from wisdom that we acquire by looking around this world, whether it's above or below, whether it's something which is inanimate or plants and vegetation, and obviously animals. And when we start to contemplate and think about and look at the world, so it'll become obvious to us, that this world is clearly designed and made by one thinker, by one God. Vihu. So what's the proof for that? Why are we assuming that? She'anu motzim oso al machlik osav v'sharashav v'yesod osav, mizdameh b'sod osav v'shaveh b'chalakav. Because if you look throughout the world, we find there are roots and there are foundations to things that are very similar to things that are derived from it. In other words, this is also very similar to an argument that we've mentioned a little bit yesterday about how when you have, for example, things that are made up of other things, that are like a composite, that are a blend of other pre-existing things, they must have come from somewhere. So his argument here essentially is to say that if you just look around the world, everything builds off of everything else. The only way that makes sense, in other words, if in reality there were multiple gods who created the world, so what his argument is that there should be just a bunch of random things that exist in the world that have no connection to each other, that they're just kind of there. But the fact that everything is kind of in what we call confluence, everything flows, everything is one unified unit, that would seem to prove to us, right, that everything is considered to be part of one person or one being's creation, essentially, right? Okay, what was that? Okay, so we're going to see as we go along, but we'll see that it has a lot to do with the way that plants grow and animals interact. We'll see as we go along, okay? What was that?
It's because,
His basic argument is that if there was really more than one God, then nothing in this world should have any connection to anything else. Everything should just be totally random. It should just be like, there's a tree here, there's an animal there, there's a whatever here. But the fact that everything kind of works in harmony, right? We have, from biology, you have the term like a symbiotic relationship, right? Things play off of each other. Things interact with each other. There's like a motion, right? We also mentioned this yesterday, the idea about how like the fact that the planets, different planets and different stars move at a specific orbit, and they constantly move at that orbit no matter what happens. So that fact seems to be an indication that there's one God who created everything. That's what the main thrust of the argument is so far. Okay? So he continues, he says, the osos chachmas habore yisale hanirim viktane hayetziros ugdolehen meidim kihim levore echad chacham. This is exactly what we just mentioned before. The signs of Hashem's wisdom in the world are manifest both in the very, very small creatures as well as in the much larger creatures. Right? He says, v'ilu haya la'olam yosar mibore echad, if the world had more than one creator, ha'yisatsuras ha'chachma mischalefes b'chelkei ha'olam v'mishtanis b'chlalav uv'achalakav. If there was more than one creator, so then what you would have to say is that the wisdom that was exhibited in the world would differ and would vary depending on where it was. Again, this is the same argument that we just made. If there's really more than one God, so then why are things connected to each other? Why does anything flow to each other? Everything should just be random. This God created that. That God created that. The fact that everything flows in confluence, it's fluid, it's one big picture, would lead us to believe that there was one God who created all of this. V'od, furthermore, ki anachnu motzim oso, we find, right, ki hu tzarich b'kiyumo v'sikuno k'tzaso al k'tzaso, we find that in order for the world, or for creations, or for plants, or whatever it is to exist, oftentimes they depend on other plants and animals and creations. The inchilik mimenu nigmar ela vechilik acher. That basically nothing is completed without the assistance, without the help of another part. For example, kitzorech kaskase hasirion. For example, let's say you have coat of armor, right? So a coat of armor is made up of different links, different, chains that fuse the armor into one big, bodysuit, basically. Right, he says v'chelke hamita, or for example, let's say the parts of a bed. Where he says v'evrei guf ha'adam, or the limbs of a human being. U'sha'ara mechubarim k'tzasam el k'tzasam b'sikuna b'hashlamasam. Anything which basically is part of a larger picture, which again is also something we spoke a lot about yesterday, right? Being part of a whole, right? So a lot of those ideas reflect the notion that everything works in consonance. Everything is interdependent. It plays off of each other, right? For example, you can argue that, every person has, 248 limbs and 365 sinews, like we say in our tefillos for when we daven for people who are sick. But if something happens to you, if you have a medical condition in one part of your body, that is going to affect your entire body, just by definition, because everything, to a certain extent, is linked together. So that's kind of his argument here. He says, just as in your own body, if something is wrong in one part of the body, that will impede your ability to function throughout the rest of the body, the same thing is true for the world at large. The world at large also operates in a very similar fashion. And he says, Halo siret sorech hayarech v'hakocha v'emel or Hashem. He says, I'll prove it to you. He says, look at the fact that the moon and the planets, in order for them to reflect light, they need the sun, right? In other words, the sun essentially reflects light off of the moon and the planets as a whole. And we also know that the earth, right, also needs the sky and the water. Right, and animals also live. It's basically like, some animals have to eat other animals to survive, and that's how you have like an ecosystem, right? And human beings eat animals to survive as well, and they eat plants, and they eat a lot of things to survive as well, right? Everything works together in one big picture, right? The sakanas hakol ba'adam, the tzorech ha'aratzos ha'plachim ha'chachmos ha'malachos k'tzasam el k'tzasam, and everything ultimately is for the betterment, is to fix up mankind. Because essentially, and this is an idea that many, many Mefarshim talk about in different contexts, that when mankind does something, so again, assuming that it's done in a positive context, that will actually elevate, the thing. No problem. Okay, that will actually elevate the thing that's happening. In other words, if you, for example, if a human being, let's say, consumes an animal, but you shechted it properly, you made a bracha on it. You, in other words, you acted in a way where you sanctified it. So now the animal becomes part of who you are. It becomes part of mankind and almost elevates the stature of the animal, in effect. So essentially, what he's saying is that every single thing that we do in this world, right, is meant to give us, mankind, a higher purpose. That's true for all the countries and the cities and the towns and the sciences and all the trades. Everything that exists in the world, essentially, is ultimately for our benefit. And the way that we're able to see this divine wisdom, this chachma of Hashem, in even the smallest creatures as well as the larger ones, for example, let's say an elephant, right? So the amount of chachma that is required to create an elephant, lufi godel gufo, despite its gigantic body, is no less impressive or wondrous or miraculous than God creating an ant, which is obviously significantly smaller. If anything, his argument is that wisdom is actually more apparent in something small like an ant, because the fact that Hashem is able to create something so tiny, right, and still move around and still function, that should be part of the miracle. So he says actually things that are smaller and maybe less impressive in nature are actually more of a proof of the of Hashem's ability to create. Again, like we mentioned, as we keep on mentioning, this is all a proof that it was the same God, the same being who created everything. Again, this is still part of his second argument that there was only one God, because everything is flowing, everything is playing off of each other, everything is inextricably linked to each other. The ilu hayalo yoser mi boreach. If there was more than one God, if there was more than one God, then wisdom would be expressed differently in some of its parts, and things would not be connected the way that they are. But because the world is different in terms of the roots and the foundations of different things, but it's similar in terms of the things that are derived, the things that come out from the original things that Hashem created. It's pretty apparent, it's pretty obvious that the creator, the designer of the world, is the same person, it's the same being. The Amar HaFilisof, and again, Aristotle said, "In b'ma shebaroha Elokim yoser nifla mima shebara." Very, very, very philosophical sounding statement. There, no part of what God created is more wondrous than any other thing that God created. Everything that God created is equally wondrous. What does that mean? V'ratzalomar, ki achachma v'katanu v'agadol mechelke ha'olam izdama v'shava. K'mo she'amar David olav ha'shalom, v'safro mine inyine ha'olam u'schunas yishuvo, marabu ma'asecha Hashem, Kulam bechachma asisa mala haaretz kenyanecha. Right, David HaMelech says every single thing kulam bechachma. Everything Hashem created was created with the same measure of chachma. Va'amar magad luma secha Hashem ma'od amikum achshav osecha. It's in the pasuk in Tehillim that we say on Shabbos. Right, the pasuk says, look how wondrous Hashem your actions are. Your handiwork, your thoughts are so beyond us. They're so deep. They're so beyond our understanding. The point, again, this is all part of the second argument. So the general thrust of the second argument basically is that if in reality there was more than one God, it would have been impossible for everything to be linked up and to function together the way that it actually does. Okay, that's like the main point of argument number two. Okay, so let's move on to the third argument now. The third argument, again, this is from the idea of Chiddush, the notion that the world is constantly being recreated. So our previous proofs, as we already mentioned in the previous prakim, have demonstrated that the world is created. It's not that the world popped into existence on its own, but rather that God created the world. So by definition, if Hashem created the world, so that there must have been a mechadish. There must have been, in other words, if the world created, it didn't just come into existence, so by definition, there must have been someone or something to have created that. Because if not, it's as we mentioned this argument a little bit yesterday, it's impossible for something to come into existence by itself. Again, yesterday as we spoke about in the previous program, he got into a whole discussion about that line of reasoning. Maybe it is possible for something to come into existence by itself, but he already disproved that in the previous program. So by definition, if something exists, it must mean that it was created, it was here, it was created by a god or by a being at least that created it. No question, Maytel? No.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with that argument so much. Because
which part of the argument?
We're saying everything of that, like everything has a creator because like God doesn't. Otherwise, you get into a paradox.
Well, are you talking about his previous argument about how everything's linked together? Or are you talking about the point that we're making right now? Hello? Hello? Everyone still there? So say it again. You're talking about the previous argument about everything is linked together, or talking about what we're saying right now?
The argument that everything has a creator.
So again, this was an argument that he really addressed more in the previous program in the fifth and sixth paragraph. He addressed this more in detail. Basically, the idea is that, again, he laid out three proofs for the fact that God exists in the first place. Now we're talking specifically about the fact that God is one, as opposed to just being simply the creator. So those are two different strands of argument, right? All he's really saying here is that the idea that something exists in the world means that someone or something must have created it. It's not, meaning, you're right, he's not necessarily proving that it was God who created it. He's just saying that there's no way this thing just popped into existence of its own accord. And just to be fair, he addressed that argument in the prakam we learned yesterday, where he basically said that it's not feasible. It's not a feasible argument to say that something came into existence by itself for a very simple reason. Because if something created itself, then you also have a paradox. Because when did the item create itself? If it created itself after it already existed, then that's kind of pointless because the item already existed. If it created itself before it existed, that's not possible because the item doesn't exist yet. In other words, he's saying, if something exists in the world, it must have gotten here somehow. Again, you could debate who or what the creator was, but the fact that something exists at all would seem to be a proof that something or someone must have created it, right? That just seems to be... What was that? Correct. It doesn't necessarily prove that it was God who created it. That's fair. It just proves that there was someone or something that created it. Again, we'll see hopefully as we go on. Hopefully we'll try to solidify some of these proofs and maybe everything will kind of come together at the end, as we'll see. Okay? So, basically he just says
because everything has a creator?
Well, again, so far, we just started the third argument, really, but the third argument so far is essentially just saying that the fact that something exists at all is a proof that someone or something created it. Now, we'll have to see how that translates into God being the one to create it. We'll see as we go along. I can't, sorry, what was that? Okay, good. So, again, let's just give it a second because we just started the third proof. So, let's get into a little more and then hopefully we'll see, okay? Fine. So he continues here. He says, "Ucheshanu motzem havaya v'yisvarer lanu ki haya achar shelo haya nida be'idus hasichel hashalim shezua sovirao v'himtzia vayaso v'yatzaroso." So now he says, "Okay, let's try to put like some logic together here." He says that it's as we just mentioned before, it's not possible for something to come into existence on its own. We just proved that. And if you see something that exists, we know that at a certain point in time, it didn't exist. In other words, obviously the fact that it exists now means that it didn't exist at some point in the past. And someone or something must have created it, right, by definition. Hello? So he says that the very fact that something exists in the world, we know by definition means that it didn't exist beforehand, right? In other words, now is, let's say, at whatever point this item came into existence by whoever created it, this is the first time that it exists. So he says, so now you know definitively that this item, this thing, must have been created at some point in the past. So he says that, again, someone or something, presumably God, was the one who created it. So again, This again, I think maybe what's challenging for you is because you really have to combine what we learned yet in the previous parakim with this parak in order to get a fuller understanding of what's going on here. So basically, he says that because we've already established that the world has a creator, and then that was in the previous parakim. We've already proven that Hashem exists. Hashem created the world, and he brought the world into existence. So that we've already proven in the previous chapters. So he says. In Roy Lahalos al Datenu Shu Yosero Pachos Neachad, She'ev Sherlim Mitzios Olam Yibelivo Reacha. So now that we know that God created the world, it is not logical. It doesn't make sense for us to then go ahead and say that there was more than one God or multiple gods that created the world. Because if you're going to think that, let's say you think that the world could exist without a creator or with less than one creator. So what would that even mean? Right? So then, Hayinu Malim al Datenu Chin. So basically, we were just saying that again, the fact that we've already proven, we've already established that God created the world, right? So it's not logical to say that someone else did. In other words, again, it doesn't even make sense to say that less than one God created the world. Like that doesn't even make any sense to us, right? Again, this is what he was saying here. Ahmed ni shelo yachonu lahaskil davar sheyuchalasos ezulaso pachos meyachad yadanu yedia sheyashalir chosakihu achad. In other words, you can't turn around to someone with a straight face and say that there was less than one God. In other words, we want to talk about multiple gods creating the world. That's a different argument, which we'll get to in a second. But to say that less than one God, that doesn't even make sense. Like what does that even mean? Less, you know, in other words, we don't usually think of like, you know, a half a God, or like usually less than one just means zero. So if you think that, then you just deny that God created the world entirely. So it's pretty apparent if once you believe in God, so then by definition you believe that it was at least one God who created the world. Ki hadvarim asher yizbaru mitzad avas haraya alehen. Again, so we've already proven, we've already established, right? In other words, all these proofs that we're bringing. So this is a thing that cannot be denied. You can't deny the belief in God as we proved in the previous prakim. So now we don't have to assume that there's more of what is necessary. So this is his argument in the opposite direction. Now he's proving that there can't be more than one God either, because he says once we've established that there's one God or that God created the world, so then what is compelling us to turn around and say, oh, maybe there was more than one God that created the world? That's also not a logical thing to to conclude. So now he's going to give you now he's going to give you an analogy. Let's say you see this was a mushel that he actually gave in the end of the sixth parak. Let's say you see a letter and the letter has perfect, beautiful handwriting on it, right? The style, the letter, the font, everything looks exactly the same, right? And everything is uniform. Everything is written, composed exactly the right way, right? So right. If you see a letter where the whole thing is written in the same font, in the same script, in the same everything, so you're just going to automatically assume that it was one person who wrote that letter, right? Just that's logical. That makes sense, right? It's highly unlikely you have two people who have literally identical handwriting. Obviously, you can't have less than one person writing a letter. The letter is here, so obviously somebody wrote it. Even though, in theory, you could have had more than one person writing this letter, but it's highly improbable. Like, you would need some kind of evidence to back up the notion that there was more than one author of this letter. Like, for example, a different handwriting. If I see a letter that's in the exact identical handwriting all the way down the letter, I'm not going to think that there were two different people who have the exact same handwriting. It's very, very, very unlikely that that's the case, right? The Imhaya Hadavar came. If this is the case, so now you don't have to know Hashem face to face. You don't have to have an intimate knowledge of God. Right? In other words, if let's say, for example, that's not possible. He says, in other words, it would be enough if we just saw the letter. You don't have to see God to know He exists. You have to see His quote-unquote writings. You have to see His actions. You don't need to see, again, the same way that if I see a letter and the letter is written in a uniform handwriting so that I know it was written by the same guy, I don't have to actually see the person to know that. So too when it comes to God. I don't have to see God to know He exists. I just have to see that His actions are consistent in the world. It's kielu like His handwriting is the same across the board. That's almost what it's like. V'yodanu yediya berur, and we know with certainty, ki chosei v'echad nimtza yodeya mechta v'yachol lichtov k'savo v'lo lishtate v'o imo zulaso v'pnei seder chiburo v'ashva aso v'pnei shemaisa shnei osem eschalif v'yidenu shave v'sudar al erech echad v'mishtane v'sikuno v'skona. So this is really a throwback and very, very similar to the point that we made in the previous argument, which is that the very fact that everything exists in the world in confluence, everything is inextricably linked to each other, seems to be the biggest proof that out there that it was the same God who created the world. Because if it wasn't, why is everything playing off of each other? Why is everything exactly the same? So again, you don't have to see God to know He exists. You just have to see His actions. V'chein omar ba'borei yisale. And again, we say the same regarding Hashem. Ki mipnei show you osos ha'chachma bivriyosav mizdamos ha'shavos. Because everything that He does is uniform, is precise. Hutzrachnu lahamin ki vorei echad barad. We're forced to believe that it was one God who created it. She'iav sher lemetzias ha'mechudashim mi'baladav. That it's not possible that two workers, that two people, made this exact thing. V'she'einenu davar nireh ha'etzem mechamikreh. And again, it's not possible that these things just popped into existence by accident. And it's not, the case that there were, you know, signs of wisdom that were just there accidentally. Since it's not visible, E.F. Charlotte Matzo Ledato Elevadarche Harayos Tabachinos Amoros Alav Mitzad Briosav. Therefore, the only way that we're going to possibly be able to prove His existence, right, is to say that you can't perceive something, you won't be able to understand something or to find Him unless you can actually observe it, unless you can actually see it in creation. Oz Tamod Lanu Emudasenu Shehu Nimsa Vishehu Echad Kadmon Hayavi Hiya Yishon Va'acharon Hibor Chacham Chai. Once you can see God in creation, right? This is like what we call like latent awareness. You're able to see Hashem existing in the world. You don't need to see Him. You don't have to see God's face to know that He exists. You have to see His presence in the world. You have to see His, almost like His signature, almost like the things that God is known for, Kilu, you have to see that in the world, right? But amdu lanu harayus alav, imkom amdenu alav, ur osenu oso yisala mipnei she'enenu me'inyanim hanirim. And since God obviously by definition cannot be seen, so again, you don't need to see Him to know He exists, you just have to see His mark, His signature in creation. That will be the proof that He exists. Al kein hutzrachnu lahalos al datenu, sheborei echad bira'am. Therefore, we have to conclude that there was only one God who created the world. Ki yishar biladav imetzios ha'mechud Hashem. There is no other way to come to such a conclusion. Ach yoser me'achad yishar biladav. It's technically possible that there was more than one God. But it's totally unnecessary to say that. Al kein, mi sheyitom shehu yoser me'achad, lo yiskai mudivarav, ela biraya zulas haraya sheheinenu. The only way you're going to be able to prove that more than one God exists is to bring an additional proof on top of the proof that we already brought to God's general existence. But it's going to be impossible to do that because any proof that you're going to bring are not contradictory. You're not trying to contradict God's existence if you believe in more than one God. You're trying to say that there are other gods. So once you say that, so then the question we have to turn back and ask the person who says that is, well, what's the point of saying that? What's compelling you to say that, right? And the fact that everything in the world is uniform, is, you know, kind of fluid, is the proof almost to the opposite. Ach kol harayos meidos al achduso umarchikos mimenu inyan haribui v'hashitu v'hadimyon kasher amar Hashem yisparach hayesha loak mibaladai v'intzor bal yadati v'amar ani rishon v'ani acharon v'amar af yadi yasta eretz v'minit tepecha shamayim korei ani alehem yam du yachdav v'amar kel tzadik u'moshia ayin zulasi. This is basically the thrust of the third argument, which is that there really is no reason, there is no good reason to say that God only, that there was only one God that created the world. It's much more logical to say, it's much more logical to say that only one God created the world and not multiple gods, because what's the point of that? Why would we be compelled to such a suggestion that more... Hello? Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on. Okay, we'll just wrap up. We'll finish the last one, then we'll stop. Okay. So again, basically, just to summarize, so we were just saying that the general thrust or gist of this argument is the idea that it's not logical to say that there's more than one God that created the world, because what is compelling you to say that? Why would you say such a thing? First of all, it's not necessary to say that there's more than one God. And also, the mashal we gave in the beginning regarding, for example, looking at a letter. So the simplest understanding is that it's the same person, the same being that signed the letter. It's that same being's actions that we can see within creation. That seems to be what it is that we're using to try and prove the existence of God. Okay, so I think we'll stop here.